broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
Give thanks for the wobble of the wheel and the limp of the pulley, the tiny pop in the heart of a light bulb as it goes out. Give thanks for the pause that loosens the noose around the rushing hours, for serifs of rain trickling down the blue gradations of a chain. And give thanks for the call of a dove that has lost its mate, and so tinges your day with the blue of this reminder. Forgive the stumble of the bow across the strings, the hair of one note that flies away from the score. Give thanks for our common imperfection. Luisa Igloria, Imperfect Ode, in her book Ode to the Heart Smaller Than a Pencil Eraser. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. Each year they come. Like migrating birds, they flock to Y Mills, Maryland, from across the Atlantic seaboard to learn how to write better, how to scrub the imperfections from their writing, and how to publish their work. Writing is a solitary endeavor, however, and so they come out of their closets, away from their computers, to commiserate with each other as well, to talk about their work, pick up new ideas, and simply renew old friendships. It is the annual Bay to Ocean Writers Conference, and it has attracted more than 3,500 writers and instructors since its inception in 1997. The flock gathered a few weeks ago, on March 12 this year, and the halls of Chesapeake College buzzed and fluttered with birds at a feeder as 200 participants pecked and picked at the literary offerings. Judy Reveal is the chairman of the conference, and she joins me today on Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, we're very happy to have you here as well. Judy, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how in the world you came to be the chairman of this writers' conference.
Well, to answer your last question first, I think I went to the bathroom, and when I came back, found that I was associated in this high manner with the conference. I've been attending the conference since 1997. I went to the first one, and I was just so amazed at what the conference was doing that I became involved, and I've worked with it on committee every conference since. I don't think I've missed one. I've been writing fiction for about 30 years. Prior to that, I did a lot of business writing, and I think that the business writing helped me understand structure and move me more comfortably into actually writing fiction. I've always been a reader. My parents were avid readers, and they instilled that in me. So writing sort of came naturally to me, and I've been doing it ever since. And working with Bay to Ocean Writers Conference is just, it's a real joy.
The format of the conference has basically stayed the same over the years, hasn't it?
It has. We've changed the venue. We started out in Easton at the Avalon Theater, and we, with the cooperation of many businesses in Easton, we had different sessions in different locations, but that meant having to go outside and from the Avalon Theater to a bank or whatever. And being that we used to have the conference the last Saturday of every February, that sometimes got a little iffy with regard to the weather. Now, we've never been snowed out or rained out, but this year we changed and had the conference. We set the conference for the second year. I'm sorry, the second weekend in March, the second Saturday in March, and we're doing the same thing next year. It will be the second Saturday in March of 2017. The program itself has remained pretty much the same. It's grown a little bit, but we're a one-day conference, and that's where we plan to stay.
Well, now it's Chesapeake College at Y Mills on a fairly consistent basis, I understand. And you have taught at the conference as well. What did you teach when you were in the front of the group?
Well, I taught craft, the difference between viewpoint and point of view when you're writing fiction, the concept of editors. What do editors want? Because I'm a freelance editor. So what do editors want? What are they looking for? And where should an author go to find one? Things like that.
Well, you have a recent book, I think.
I do.
The Four Elements of Fiction, which speaks to your skill and what you taught back when you had a session in the conference. Tell us just briefly about your book.
Well, the book is The Four Elements of Fiction, Character, Setting, Situation, and Theme. It's a small book, intentionally designed to be a small book. It's geared more to new writers, although it has a lot of information that a more experienced writer might want to say, I don't understand dialogue. I need to improve my dialogue. And I would like to think that the information that I've got in the book on dialogue would help them. It actually sprang out of my editorial work because I edit a lot of books where the authors haven't done all of their homework in terms of how do they address the techniques that are needed. And so I'm hoping that this book will help them in that environment.
Judy, why do you think the conference has been sold out every year, I understand, and this year was no exception.
Right.
Why do people come to this conference? Do you have a sense of what brings them to this set of instructors and this curricula?
Well, I think it is the product. This was our 19th year. Next year we celebrate 20 years of doing this. As you said, it has been a sellout every year. And when the people come, when the writers come, they're looking for help, not only in terms of the classes that they attend, but the people that they can talk to. And everyone from the faculty, we address our presenters as faculty, to the volunteers, everybody is accessible. Nobody goes and hides in a room. And if somebody wants to just talk about doing something and getting some help, we're there to give them that. And I think that the word of mouth has spread around with regard to that. Now, we also do our basic advertising and press releases and everything to make sure everybody understands. But we open the registration on October 1st for an event that occurs in March. And October 1st, we start seeing people sign up.
Well, I'm a writer, and I've got something written down here, and I've got ideas that I would like to publish it. So I think, okay, I'll go to this conference and learn how to publish my my piece of work that that I've got here on Microsoft Word. what am I going to learn? Am I going to get something from this conference if I do that?
Yes, you are.
What's going to happen to this person?
This person is going to walk in. Now, we do publish, we have a website, so anybody can go to the website and look at the program, and they can see what different presentations are being made, and they can pick and choose. They can cherry pick what they want to attend. We have everything from the craft of writing to publishing to we used to have some agents that would come out. We don't do that any longer. We have poetry. We have panels on magazines. We've got just about everything that anybody could want.
So what I'm going to do then is I'm going to come in and I'm going to find a a section on publishing, and I'm going to go to that session and get some ideas and then meet with the instructor afterward and get more ideas. Is that what's going to happen to me?
Well, you could. The instructors make themselves available to the attendees, and if there are questions that didn't get answered, then we recommend go and poke that guy on the back and say, "Excuse me, can I talk to you for a minute?" and ask the questions. Since you brought up publishing, the publishing world is going through a lot of changes right now. And so we have people that talk about traditional publishing as well as self-publishing and how to make either one work for you. What are the drawbacks to both? What are the advantages of both? And of course, as I said before, the faculty, they make themselves available.
Well, why... The Delmarva area it seems to me anyway, is a real hotbed of writers and writing. Mm-hmm. And it stretches all the way from Ocean City and Rehoboth over the Atlantic to the Bay and the three Delmarva states as well. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that is there something in the water that creates such a large community of writers?
Well, I honestly don't know how to give you a specific answer to that. There's a great deal of history here, a lot of research to be had, and whether you, as an author, want to take a piece of history and write it as fiction, or research it and write something as nonfiction, would just depend on what your preferences are, what your style of writing is. But the authors here, you're right, they stretch all the way from Chestertown down to Ocean City. We have people that are successful writers and successful poets of throughout the entire peninsula. Now, I also have to say that we also gather people from that come down for the conference from Pennsylvania, from New Jersey. They come over from Virginia. They come over from West Virginia. They come over from the western shore of Maryland. We've got people that have zeroed in. And if they're serious writers, this is not a frivolous conference. If they're serious writers, they know about us and they want to come and enjoy part of what we have to offer. Some of our faculty live in the Virginia area or Western Shore, and they come over every year and look forward to doing their presentations.
Well, I think for me also, you mentioned the rich history of the area here, and I think to some degree also on the Delmarva, the pace of life is a little bit more conducive to the contemplative attitude. And in addition to that, it seems to me that the Bay Area has some very unique and very interesting traditions that pique the imagination of writers. Do you find that as well?
I do. In talking to other writers, either at Beta Ocean or at the Eastern Shore Writers Association or at any of the other writers groups that exist in Delaware and the southern part of Maryland, I find that there is a lot of attention paid to the area. But, you know, I'd like to just take a minute and stretch the conversation that the location of the Delmarva Peninsula is so attuned to, or the writers in this area are so attuned to writing settings and writing locations. And setting is something that sits in the background of a story, and yet it is so important. And you're right, the Delmarva Peninsula is laid back for the most part. You can sit I sit at my desk and I look out the window and I look across the farmlands. And if it's raining, my mind goes to setting a scene with rain or snow or a breeze wafting through the window and sucking the curtains back against the screen. The importance of setting is something that just cannot be understated. And it's, I think that anybody who's serious about writing is going to look at where they're at. And even if they're writing a story that takes place in Maine, they will look at what is happening in the month or the season or the time of day where they are at, and they can pull different things from the Delmarva Peninsula and apply them to that.
Well, I noticed that you had a new class offering this year that does speak to the traditions of the Bay. You had a session, which I thought was kind of unique, on songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is writing.
That's
and,
right.
and people write songs as well. Tom McHugh from Rock Hall was the instructor. And I had a chance to talk to Tom for a minute while I was at the conference. He writes and performs songs about the Bay, and you'll listen to him in just a minute. You'll notice that Tom sounds like a good old boy from Rock Hall, but don't be fooled. Tom has a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania, and he taught at Vassar. And here's what Tom had to say, and here's a little bit of his music as well.
What I try to do is demystify songwriting, pointing out that for time in memoriam, people have written songs. It used to be a common thing in schools for kids to write songs. If you deal with cultures other than American, some African cultures, I travel a great deal to Ireland and to Hungary, singing and songwriting is just part of the culture. It's just part of the tradition. So part of what I did in the class today was actually I got some of them to create a song right there today, and we had fun with that. I played a couple of my songs. I pointed out that all of us have either within our family roots or within experiences that we have had, the ability to pull out a theme. It might be, for me, some of my songs are based upon my experiences raising my children. I have two daughters. Some of it is my deep dedication to the Chesapeake Bay. I studied astutely always the music of Tom Wisner, who passed away some years ago, who wrote the famous song Chesapeake Born, Chesapeake Free, and I'm a great lover of Pete Seeger's music, and so the class was about getting them to feel that, yes, I can write a song.
Tom founded the Mainstream in Rock Hall, a nonprofit center for the arts. And they've hosted, I understand, almost 800 conference now. Later on in the program, we're going to hear a little more from Tom and a little bit of his music as well. But Judy, let me ask you, how did you come up with the idea for a class on songwriting, and whose brilliant suggestion was that? And how did you go about finding Tom Wisner?
Well,
Tom McLeod.
Actually, we had an Eastern Shore Writers Association meeting in Rock Hall. We try to have meetings around the peninsula so we can get as many people to attend as possible. And Rock Hall, we had not been to, so we contacted Tom and asked him if he would do one of our monthly programs, and he said yes, he would be thrilled to do that. So we had the meeting up at the mainstay in Rock Hall, and It went over very well. It was a very popular program. And we got to thinking, and I have to give credit to Mala Burt, who is the volunteer who pulls our speakers together. And she asked him if he would be interested in performing at, or I shouldn't say performing, speaking at Beta Ocean Writers Conference. And he agreed. He said, yes, he would love to. So it was just purely chance, but a good chance for us.
Well received?
Oh, well received, absolutely. Yeah, I heard a lot of good comments from people who had left his session talking about wanting to do more songwriting.
Well, he's a delightful man, Tom McHugh. The Beta Ocean Writers Conference has a bookstore. And in the bookstore, there's the opportunity for attendees at the conference to bring their books and sell them. Kathy Harrig, the owner and operator of Mystery Loves Company, runs the bookstore for the Beta Ocean Writers Conference. And I asked Kathy what books were selling these days, and her comment was really very, very interesting. She said that in the Oxford area where she is, it's books about the bay that sell better than other books. A lot of activity toward the bay, and so. I wanted to ask you, Judy. What do you have any experience with writing about the bay or with authors? I know you. I know you edit books. Do you get a lot of books about the bay that you were asked to edit?
I've had a couple, but not. I don't have an awful lot. A lot of my clients come from all parts of the world, and they're writing about their parts of the world, but that's similar in structure to writing about the bay. I think that one of the most important things about writing about the bay or any other area is that the research is correct, and that once the writer is ready to sit down and do their writing, that if they're writing about oysters, they're not writing about clams. They make sure that they have done their research. And that's because the people who will read their stories, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, are going to pick it up because of the location, and they are going to know some things. And if the research isn't done correctly, they're going to back off and put the book down. So it's really the research into the location. I did have one gentleman who wrote a thriller, and it was all set in the Chesapeake Bay, and he had done his homework. He knew about the bay tides and the oyster.
Was he from the Bay Area?
Yeah, he lives here on the shore, actually down around Easton. Yeah. So, he could put the exciting things in as long as he had the more mundane research done. And it turned out to be quite a good book.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I found it interesting from Kathy that the Bay books are such mm-hmm. large sellers in the area, and I don't know. It just seems to me that the Bay Area is such a romantic area anyway. Mm-hmm. It seems really conducive to me to offer, as you said earlier, setting mm-hmm. For a book. Well. One of the instructors writes mysteries, and one of them is Austin Camacho, and I know that you know Austin. I don't believe he writes about the bay, frankly. I think maybe there's some setting in his mystery, but he writes thrillers and action adventure. He told me, and he has, for example, 9 books for sale in the bookstore, all action and adventure and thrillers. Well, Austin teaches at Anne Arundel Community College, and he did a session on conflict and suspense. Well, I thought that was very fitting for today's world anyway, particularly the conflict side. I talked to him for a few minutes at the conference, and here's what Austin had to say about his work. How do your characters act? In are they law-abiding citizens, or who are they, Austin?
Well, remember, I've got more than one series going on here. My private eye fiction, Hannibal Jones, is very much the law-abiding citizen. He is cut from the traditional hard-boiled detective pattern, which means that, of course, he has his own personal morality code. But I think he is a traditional good guy. On the other hand, with the thriller stuff, I play a little more fast and loose. When you're dealing with international crimes and villains, you can stray from the law a bit. But my guys are always working in concert with the CIA or the DIA or some such official organization. They are not ignoring all the rules and killing everybody who gets in their way. That's not my style.
Austin, what is the difference between thriller and action adventure, as an example?
Okay. I think if you call your stuff straight out action adventure, you're not too worried about the plot. Whereas in a good thriller, the plot is very important. There's a big suspense element. There is usually a big problem that your poor hero is facing, and it doesn't have to be the end of the world, but something major, something that's outside of our normal situation.
Judy, you write mysteries, and I assume that Austin is on target here with his distinction between action adventure and thriller. Am I correct here?
Yeah, absolutely. Austin is one of our most popular presenters, and when he talks, you heard him explain the difference between the two types of stories, and when he does that, he draws the attention of the people who are in his class. He's very approachable. We're very fortunate to have him on our faculty. Austin has been with us for probably about 10 years now, and he is just so reliable in the different crafts that we ask him to present on, whether it's the style of the books that he writes, or if he gets down into the nitty-gritty of how do you develop characters for these styles and how do the characters differ. He is always one of the most well-received presenters that we've got.
Judy, as a mystery writer, tell us about one of your mysteries.
Oh, dear.
let me ask you the question. No oh dears here. You've written a lot of books. Let me ask you, as a mystery writer, do you follow a formula? Are you a formula writer at all?
No, I'm not. If I have a story that's pinging in my head, I'll sit down and I will just start with a blank screen and start to write it. The mysteries that I have written, I've written three mysteries, all with the same characters. So I know who they are, what their beliefs are, what they do in their lives, and how they get messed up in different things that occur.
Well, tell us about one of your mysteries.
Okay. The second mystery that I wrote is called The Music Room. And it is, as with most mysteries are not really character-driven. They're story-driven. We want to know about what's happened, if someone has been murdered, which somebody always says.
I'm pushing you a little bit here, Judy. Tell us your story.
Well, the story.
Tell, what's your story?
The story is about a woman who, an older woman, who rents a cottage on her property to one of our main characters. And in the first chapter, she dies. And she leaves her property, she leaves her entire property to this character. His name is Conrad. And he's relatively new to the area. He has no idea why she would be leaving all the property. She's the last of the family. And she leaves some cryptic notes about, you're going to find out some things in the house and treat them very carefully. And so he and the other character, Lindsay Gale, as the story goes on, they start to find different little clues that have been left around, either in the term of pictures or diaries or whatever. And people start dying around them, and come to find a hidden room in the house. And it's not so much that it's a hidden room as much as it's a room that's been locked for 70 years. And when they go in, it's just nothing but, it's a music room, and it's nothing but dust and soiled, not soiled furniture, but you know, dust from accumulation. And they start going through things that are there, and things start getting stolen, and as I said, other people start dying, and they have to, it's incumbent upon them to find out what the story is. And basically it goes back 70 years to a murder that occurred 70 years ago, and the wrong person was charged for it, and he disappeared. And at the end, we find out why he disappeared and what happened to him. And
you're not going to tell
and
us,
and I'm not going to tell you, no. It's called The Music Room.
Right. Well, there's in mysteries, there's usually an event that happens early, and then the book is people trying to figure out what happened, and that's exactly what you've that's exactly what you have done here. Kathy Harrig, when I was talking to Kathy about who's buying books and what's popular, she brought up something I thought was very, very interesting, that is to some degree obvious, but it's something that you don't think about very often. Kathy began to tell me that she noticed among her customers that books have the capacity to change people's mood, and to change their emotions. Listen to what Kathy had to say.
When you're talking to a customer, there's something called bibliotherapy. And what that means is it's actually a science. And what it means is the book has the power to change one's emotions. And it has the power to soothe one's emotions, make one more angry, make one more thoughtful, make one more interested. And if you have a mood that you're in at the moment, and I'm talking about an individual customer, if you have a mood that customer is in at the moment, it is the shrewd bookseller that gets at that mood and asks them, what would you like to read today? What are you interested in? How would you describe what you've been reading? Would you like something different? Would you like it the same? So I can't say that I would recommend a single book for everybody. I think everybody has their own particular book in mind when they walk in that door, and they just don't know it, and it's up to me to try to figure out what that is.
Well, the power of books to change our emotions and our mood. Do you deal with that issue at all, Judy, in your books?
I do. And one of the goals that every writer should have is at the end of the story, when the reader finishes, reads the end, closes the book, what you want that reader to do for the next 3 days is go back and think about the story, think about the characters. And there's the emotion that goes along with that. If you haven't created the emotion, they'll put the book down. It might be just a fine book. And they'll put it down or put it on the shelf, and that'll be the end of it. But the writer who can get their readers to go back and look at, always remember, I'm washing my dishes and I'm thinking about this character and how strong this character was and how strong the story was with whatever emotion came about. A short story, if I might, in my book, The Brownstone, when I was in the process of writing the draft, I had given the finished draft to a number of people to read, and two of them were men. And at one point, one of the men called me up, and he said, "I hate you." And I said, "Uh-oh, what have I done?" And he said, "You made me cry." And I said, "Okay, how did I do that?" And he said, "I got to the end of your story." And I knew exactly what he was talking about. Same thing happened the other man that read it. His wife called me one day and she said, "I have to tell you, my husband just came into my office, sat down, and he's crying." And I thought, oh dear, something happened in the family. And she said, "No, he finished your book and he's crying." And I knew exactly what she was talking about. And the end of the book.
What was she talking about?
You really want
me to
spoil? Oh,
no, not the end of your book, but I understand.
Well, she was talking about the emotion of the scene that he read. And how it played on him.
And what was the scene? Your book, Judy, I understand, is about a group of people living in a brownstone in New York during the Second World War, and how they deal with the war and with what is happening to them. So what is the scene that makes people cry?
Well, the scene is that the owners of the brownstone are a Jewish couple who had left Czechoslovakia before World War II. And the husband had a brother who was a doctor still back in Czechoslovakia. And he was trying to get him to come to America. And it just got to a point where he couldn't get his brother out. And they would have ethereal conversations amongst themselves, between the two brothers. And the one brother knew that it was too late for him to get out, but he was a doctor. He had to see to the people in the town and is that next thing. And at the end of the story, the war is over. Everybody's sitting on this. It's a hot October day. Everybody's sitting on the steps of the brownstone and they're all talking. And all of the ends have been pulled together. And a taxi comes down the street. And taxi driver gets out, sees everybody sitting at the house. And he gets out and he says, "I got this guy here. Just gave me a card. I can't understand him. Gave me a card with your address on it. And can you help me here?" And everybody just stopped and looked, and it was the brother. Mm. And he was the only one who got out of Czechoslovakia.
He was the only one.
He was the only one that survived. The others all died.
Yeah.
So, and hopefully it's my writing that makes people cry when they read that, or makes them at least think about what happened here. And is the outcome good one, or is the outcome not a good one?
Well, Judy, you also take a step back, as we indicated earlier, and you review books. You review books for
the New York Journal of Books.
Tell us about your work reviewing books for them, but particularly, what do you look for?
Well, I look for style of writing, and the interesting thing about the New York Journal of Books, it's an online book review business. They allow us, the reviewers, to pick whatever we want. They do not assign us to anything. We don't get paid, except that we get paid in books. And to me, that works. We get to pick whatever books we want to read. They post them on their website. And then when I request a particular book, within a couple of days, that shows up in my mail, in my inbox, and I will start reading it. I look for the writing style of the author.
Tell us a book that you recently reviewed that you really liked, and why you liked that book.
I just finished reading a book called "Lay Down Your Weary Tune," which I believe was a Bob Dylan title, And it's about a young man who's a wannabe musician, wannabe freelance writer. He really has no direction in his life. And he is hired to go and live with an old guy who was a well-known performer in the 60s, 70s, and write his life, write his... And so he goes and meets this man in a small town in upstate New York, and he had been a fan of this performer for years. So he goes up and he meets, and the guy is just crotchety. Just, he doesn't want this done at all. And as the story progresses, there are a lot of secrets that start coming out of the woodwork. And some of them are secrets of his. Some of them are secrets of the young woman who becomes the love interest of the younger man. And some of them are secrets of the young man. And the author is W.B. Belcher. This is his first novel. His writing style just riveted me. Now, I couldn't put this book down.
What was it about his style? What does he do that that captured
his
you?
Writing is very, it was, he wrote the whole thing in first person, which is a difficult point of view to take for an entire novel. But he did, and he was pure to it. He was honest to that point of view. He had a command of the language, much like you. You have a good command of the language. And his writing was active, very active. Mm-hmm. And you became this character.
Active means it's present. It's now. Yeah. It's happening.
Well, active means that it's active. It is occurring as we're reading it. That doesn't mean it's present tense, but it's occurring as we're reading it. Whereas passive is generally the author telling you, oh, stand over here on this mountain and watch what's going on. He wasn't like that. I just couldn't write enough good things about this book. I highly recommend it. Mm. Anybody who's interested, this is his first novel, and it's just... very well done. I was very pleased with it. I can't say that I'm the same about the book I'm reading now, but we won't go into that.
Oh, no, let's not go into that. Nancy Sakadusky was an attendee at the conference, and I had a chance to chat with Nancy as well. And Nancy works on the Beach Reads contest that's sponsored by Browse About Books over in Rehoboth, and Nancy's very active in the writing community here on the Delmarva, and she actually edits the short stories that are submitted for the Beach Reads contest, and she works with writers, as I know you do as well. And let's hear what Nancy said about working with the writers who submit their stories to the Beach Reads contest.
I like to think I have a good eye for fiction, and I've done a lot of editing of fiction and working with writers on their stories, both the contest entries, because after the judges have made their selections, I work with each author to perfect their stories and make them the best they can be. And a lot of the writers tell me this is what they enjoy most about being in the contest, getting their works accepted, as I do spend a lot of time. And it's a teaching moment, because I go through and explain to them why I'm asking for changes I'm asking for, and work with them collaboratively to make the stories really the highest quality possible. So I've had a lot of experience with editing fiction and with helping writers, and also the books that I've published of collections of writers' works. I work with the writers on developmentally editing their books.
And I know that that Nancy has a new book out as well, called Writing. I believe it's called Writing Winning Short Stories. So you guys are busy writing how to write books here. But I along with that, you do work with writers. Mm-hmm. And what is your style, Judy, of working with writers who are in the middle of the creative process?
Well, I usually work with those who are have finished their manuscripts, and they contact me about editing their manuscript. I work electronically and provide feedback for them in by embedding my comments right in there.
So generally not person to person.
Well, yeah, we will over the phone, we'll talk. There have been a couple of local people that I've met with and been able to talk to directly. But for the most part, the people who come to me, I mean, I've had people from Australia, from Israel, from India, so... And then, of course, the people who come to me from the United States.
What are the greatest mistakes that you find when you start reading someone's manuscript?
Really passive writing.
What is passive writing?
Well, passive writing is when the author is telling you what, you know, we talk about show, don't tell. Show is active. Tell is passive. And telling is generally the author is standing in the wings with the reader, with an arm around the reader, saying, okay, now she's going to do this and he's going to do that. And, you know, a simple use of words can make a difference. Instead of saying he could hear his mother screaming in the distance, that's passive. The author writes, he heard his mother screaming in the distance. The use of the word could is will make all the difference. Neither one is wrong. Neither one is right. It's just, do you want your reader turning pages? And if you do want your reader turning pages, then you have to write actively.
Judy, what is your goal as an editor? When you take someone's work and begin working on it, what's your goal?
My goal is to be able to get across to them what they're doing right and where they're challenged. I've had critiques done of my work that were just cruel, absolutely cruel. And I said to myself when that happened, if I'm ever in a position where I can help a writer, I'm not going to be unkind to them. I will tell them, I'll be truthful. I will say, you know, your dialogue is really good. You're having a problem with your point of view character, or you flip-flop from first person to third person, and while some people like that, it's really not true to the writing. And I will give them, everybody gets a report from me. They get their manuscript back with everything embedded in it, but they get a report from me. And I always tell them, read the report first. And that will
before you throw something at me.
Before you read the manuscript and really panic about it, because if you've ever used the tracking function in Word, you know what that can be like.
Yes, I have seen that.
I'm sure you have, but not very much, I'm sure. So my goal is really to help them understand what their writing does to the reader, and if it's good or if it's not good. We have one member in Eastern Shore Writers Association who came to me not too long ago and asked me, she hired me to edit her book. And normally I indicate on my contract with a client that I'm going to take up to 8 weeks, probably less, but up to 8 weeks. This person, I took 1 week. Her writing was so good. Her story just moved and moved and moved. And it was just a dream to read that kind of writing and to be able to go back and write a 2-page report instead of a 20-page report.
No, that's really excellent. Yeah. Well, we're going to finish up today with Tom McHugh again. And Tom, as you heard, challenged his students to write a song right there on the set in the classroom. So when I talked to Tom at the conference, I challenged him to write a song for us. Let's listen to Tom. Let me ask you to, first of all, play a song for us. And after that song, I want you to write a song for us. Okay, don't fall over now. But first a song, and then write a song for us. So here we go.
I'm
right now what I'm doing is thinking of which song here. That song, but it's a song that honors Rock Hall as a village and town years and years ago. And I play that often for people of my age group who remember all these things that are in the song. So one of the things I do is I write songs of nostalgia about things that have disappeared. I have a song about steamboats on the Chesapeake. I wrote a song for my daughters that honors them. Makes fun of them, but honors them.
Write a song for us.
Okay, I often try this with someone. I want you to give me three words.
Skipjack, storm clouds, she left him early in the morning.
Well, we'll just use she left him, right?
That sounds
skipjack.
That sounds fine.
Storm clouds. She left him in the morning. Steam clouds and dark clouds brewing. Left him in the morning, those clouds were gathering and brewing. A big old Chesapeake Bay skipjack took her away that morning. The skipjacks are gone now, and so is that sweet woman of his. Skipjacks are gone now, and he lost his sweet woman too. And the clouds sit over him, just like me and you.
Wonderful, Tom. Wonderful. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Okay. All right, a little traveling music to end our program. Judy Reveal, thanks for joining me today on Delmarva Today Writers Edition. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.
Flapper, yes, sir, one of those. Has anybody seen my gal?
You've been listening to a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with their host, Harold Wilson. This program is produced on the campus of Salisbury University for Delmarva Public Radio. Christopher Rank is your audio engineer. Mary Seaman is the volunteer producer. Visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, for podcasts of this program.